Anyway, let me just bounce back here to the school committee numbers here just a little bit, just to rattle those off. Okay, so for the school committee, Elizabeth Hudson did best, Richard Harding did second best. And then you really start to see that slate of candidates that were endorsed by the Cambridge Education Associates and who were part of that big citywide mailing. So I didn't I came as a bit of a shock to me that Luisa de Paula Santos would have finished third in number one votes with a very surprisingly good total. Caitlin Doob was also part of that. And here's where it gets a little strange. So Eugenia Chauhot is not actually part of that slate. So she finishes, in one, two, three, four, fifth in number one vote totals, but she's not part of a slate, not really a part of a slate. To sort of, to get numbers fed to you, right? And there were 23,115 ballots around, so you got to win, about 1/7 of those to get a seat. So then there's Arjun Jayakumar, Jane Hershey, David Weinstein, who was incumbent. By the way, perhaps the big story here is how many incumbents just got slaughtered here. So Jose Luis Rojas Villarreal, good man, did very poorly. Carolyn Hunter got beat up. So those were two incumbents that got thrown off, and Rachel Weinstein wasn't seeking re-election. So in the end, you ended up with three incumbents and then two challenge, actually three challengers joining them. All right. Anyway, there weren't too many surplus ballots, so and what that means is that any effort to have a recount would have almost no effect because the randomness that's quasi-randomness associated with surplus distribution isn't a factor here. So even if there was a recount, maybe a couple of ballots might move. That's about it. So anyway, you knock off the under 50, which were just the excuse me, just the write-ins. Then Melanie Gauss. Beijing. By the way, you'll notice here there's no sizable alphabetical bias, maybe a little bit. Gauss gives 18 to Goetz and then 12 to Harding and then down from there, but not that substantial. You knock off Bejnud, Ann Coburn, Alex Bowers, who I really liked. I really wish she had done better. I thought she was really good, really solid, good person. I mean, some of my favorites actually didn't do super well here, like Jane Hershey, who I've known for 30 years, didn't do super well. And Eugenia, who ultimately was the last person counted out. But in the end, instead of the top six winning, it was actually the top four won. And then there was the fifth person and the seventh person didn't win, but the sixth and the eighth person, David Weinstein, the incumbent, I guess there is some momentum associated with incumbency that means you're going to be named on more ballots, then ultimately you have a chance at being reelected, even if your number one vote totals were a little bit lower. All right. So anyway, so that those were the official winners. And as I say, if somebody were to challenge any of these things, nothing's really going to change. Now one of the things that I like to do afterwards, so on Friday, I always ask for the ballot data, and then I do some analysis of various sorts of the ballot data, just to kind of, somewhat because a lot of people expect it from me, quite honestly. So I wanted to just mention a little bit about that. Oh, by the way, before lest I forget, there was also a ballot question on the new proposed city charter for Cambridge. And I know there were a bunch of people who were opposed to it, and there were some good arguments to sort of question it. In the end, I came out saying, like, yeah, on balance, it's not much of a change. It's still just Plan E with a few little revisions here and there. But it will no longer be called Plan E because it's created under a different section of Massachusetts general laws. So we'll just call it the Cambridge Charter from now on. But one of the bigger, well, soon to be noticeable effects of this. Well, first off, it'll give the Election Commission some more flexibility to modify the way they do the tabulations so as to remove, hopefully, if they vote to do so, remove any potential quasi-randomness, so that, in other words, if you took all the ballots and just shuffled them and then reran the count, you'll get exactly the same result if they move, if they vote to move that way. There's a surplus distribution and a few other reasons why there can be a small, relatively small changes, especially when there's large surpluses involved. So hopefully that, in another year or so from now, the Election Commission will vote to move to a ballot order independent method, which I think would be a good thing. It was for me, it was the one thing I wanted to see happen, and it did happen. They were also something I've been advocating for 25 years, was that I actually believe every elected body should have the right to choose its own chair. So I like the fact the city council gets to choose its mayor, because the mayor is really just the chair of the city council. The city manager is the chief executive, not the mayor. So I think it's correct that the council choose its own chair. But the school committee never has, ever since 1941, and before, actually, ever since 1846, has never been able to choose its own chair, because the mayor would automatically become the chair of the school committee. And I think it's better that they get to choose their own. So this way, under the new charter, and this goes into effect January 1st, so that everybody will be inaugurated under the new charter. Then the mayor will be selected, will become a member of the school committee, but not automatically the chair. They could choose that person to be the chair, but and considering how many non-incumbents are on the body now, 3 out of 6, that kind of decreases the population of people who've been there. You don't necessarily want to make chair a brand new person, right? So there really would only be 3: Weinstein, Harding, and Elizabeth Hudson. But if the three you were to sort of rise up, and if they got a mayor who they liked, they could choose the mayor to be the chair of the school committee. So we'll see. We'll find out in January, right? Doesn't matter to me so much. I'm not that involved with the schools, but I still think it's correct that a body gets to choose its own chair. So anyway, so that ballot question was successful. 73% of the people voted to approve it. 23% voted to oppose the change, largely based on the argument that, well, there's no need. There were 4% of them blank. And that was the result. So it prevailed, and that's that. Okay. Now, let's get into some of the esoterica. All right. So, when I get the ballot data, I immediately, just like a little rodent burrowing through a tunnel, I start looking at things. By the way, let me see if I can successfully pull this up here. Is that something that most people you probably never see, but I'm going to actually show it to you here if I can successfully navigate my way to doing this thing. I always forget how. Okay, so here we go. So there is a thing with the Choice Plus Pro software. There's something we call the configuration file. Now, the configuration file, which is basically the instructions you give to the computer, to the software, that tells you how to read the ballot data. So it tells you which fields are just alphanumeric, which ones are the rankings. It matches codes, candidate, code C01 through C19, with the people listed on the ballot. They had to make a special accommodation for Louise Vendon, who was a write-in candidate. So every ballot that cast a write-in was going to be classified as write-in number one. Right? But there were a few other write-in choices made as well. Normally, there would be 33 files listed here to include when you do the count, but I always concatenate all the precinct files into a single file, so I just include one file. And then that's why I say it's RW1 file is what I entitled this. So I always like to run the election, and then just see, do I get the same results that the city got? And of course, they always are exactly the same. So I do that, and then there are a few other little tests that I do. I think if I can successfully navigate my way back to this here, I'll just mention here. Let's do it this way, shall we? What I can do is you can actually take the results of the election, and you can take the files, and you can determine who would replace each of the city councilors. Okay, so on the city council, if there should be a vacancy, when and you know, I wish everybody good health here, so hopefully everybody survives their term just fine, or doesn't take a job in New York City like a school committee member did a few years ago. But again, you can kind of see certain patterns that are predictable. For example, Aya Al-Zoubi, who's more sort of hardcore left wing, would be replaced by Stan Rifkin, who is somewhat that way as well. Burhan Azim, solid ABC, would be replaced by the last person counted out amongst the ABC candidates, Dana Bolster, not the 10th person who was the last one counted out, but amongst, because the placements are determined by the ballots that elected the departing councillor or the departing school committee member. So they tend to be reflect the replacements tend to be have some enough similarity with the departing councillor so that you maintain the proportionality. So Azim would be replaced by Bolster. Tim Flaherty, who was independent but probably m most appropriately replaced by John Hanratty. Mark McGovern, also ABC, replaced by Bolster, ABC. Paddy Nolan was independent this time, and perhaps not by choice, but she was. But, woman for woman, maybe that's the best matchup you can hope for. Sumbul Siddiqui would be replaced by Aisha Wilson, as would Denise Simmons. Again, incumbency gives you a bit of an advantage in likelihood of being a replacement. Sabrina Wheeler, also ABC, would be replaced by Bolster, ABC. And Kathy Zusi, who was CCC, would be replaced by fellow CCC top, second best candidate, second best finisher candidate, John Hanratty. You certainly can see the evidence of the slate, the CEA slate with the school committee replacements. So, and there are other factors as well. So DePaulo Santos would be replaced by Lily Havstad, who was part of that group. Caitlin Dubey would be replaced by Jess Getz, also part of that slate. Richard Harding replaced by Carolyn Hunter. That's not because of a slate, but that's, I believe, fair to say, is racial identification. Elizabeth Hudson, who was gung-ho for algebra, 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 but as was Eugenia Schraher, that I think Eugenia would be the most likely replacement, and that's exactly how it would work out. Arjun Jayakumar was part of that CEA slate, replaced by a fellow slate member, Jess Getz. And David Weinstein, not really affiliated with any of these slates, but he was an incumbent, would be replaced by a departing incumbent, Jose Luis Ros Villarreal. Okay. There are a couple of other sort of things that you can do with the ballot data that perhaps I should mention here, just as a curiosity, if nothing else, which is that, there's inevitably, I mean, I already know people are already fighting with each, not fighting with people are there's private discussions going on among city councilors as to, who should be the mayor. And certainly in the school committee, I'm not privy to any particular information about who's kind of wants to be the chair of the school committee. But I guess they will have a chair and a vice chair, but for all intents and purposes, the chair will assume the roles that the vice chair used to have in terms of appointing subcommittees and things like that. But if you decide, I'm not saying this is a best system, but if you use as just some measure of popularity and appropriateness for who should be the next mayor, some people would argue that if you would just use the ballot, same ballots that elected the city council to elect not nine people, but just excluding all the candidates who were not elected. So there's only nine eligible candidates are the people who were elected. And if you continue to do the series of runoffs, so you have nine, gets down to eight, down to seven, down to six, down to five. I didn't show all of the counts, but by the time you get to count seven, McGovern is somewhat ahead of Siddiqui, who is then ahead of, well ahead of Kathy Zusi, again, representing fundamentally different constituencies, I would argue. When you count out Zusi, McGovern easily bests Stumble Siddiqui in this, even though Siddiqui did do a little bit better in number one votes. So I'm sure Mark McGovern will use this as sort of an argument for maybe why he's the people's choice, as the phrase goes. But again, that's not the sole determining factor in who should be mayor, right? No longer can you use the argument that the mayor is going to be chair of the school committee, but the mayor will be a member of the school committee, so there is still some merit to using that argument. Over on the school committee side, interestingly, Elizabeth Hudson ends up being just a little bit better than the newcomer DePaula Santos. Again, you start to see this is when you get to the next to last round in the if you were to do an instant runoff to select one person amongst the elected school committee members as chair. And then Harding is third. So if you count out Richard Harding, then Hudson wins handily. I mean, there were a lot of people, myself included, who liked both Hudson and Harding. When you count out Harding, it doesn't necessarily go to the lefty, the leftist. It goes to a person based on other criteria. So Lizzie Hudson would end up easily defeating newcomer DePaula Santos in that if people were to actually do things that way. Okay. There are a few other things that we can look at as well. I think maybe I'll just sort of step out here. Again, I'm not trying to, I guess maybe I am trying to inundate you with data and information here. But, and again, I have all of this stuff posted on the website, so you can access it anytime you want. And, and if you have any other questions you would like to ask the ballot data for either city council or school committee, I'd be more than happy to ask the data for what's up, right? But one of the things, well, there were two other things that a lot of people ask about, and ultimately, the city will provide information about the distribution of number one votes by ward and precinct. So people want to see, did I do well in this part of the city versus that part of the city? So that's something everybody asks for. So that was made available, I believe, yesterday, maybe earlier, but I independently ran it just from the ballot data itself to determine that and then just checked it against it. I think I did a quick check, honestly. I hope I didn't. I hope my numbers don't disagree, but I think they are, they're going to certainly be approximately the same anyway. So let me see if I can just find the council by ward and precinct here. So let me access it in the way I prefer to access it here, which is as a PDF, then straight away. So I think this is it. Yep, here we go. So in this one here, you'll see for and the way you have to read this is that and Al this is where did Al Zuby pick up her votes across the city? You'll see that she did very well in like wards 3 and 4. She also did pretty well over on Ward 10. Remember, some precincts actually just have low voter turnout overall, like 5-2, like almost nothing. I think that's one of the MIT precincts. There's another one, 8-3 is also really a low turnout poll. But there's some precincts that scored had like for example 4-1 got over 1,000 people voting. As 6-1 was another one, and 6-3 was yet another one. And actually, the biggest of all is 9-1, which is often the case that over 1,400 ballots cast, and also 10-2 and then 10-1. But if you look at how the individual candidates did geographically, you can sort of see where Al-Zubi picked up the most votes. Burhan Azim was largely distributed pretty evenly across the city because it's more of a, now he doesn't really have a geographic constituency, right? It's just more of the, build housing everywhere, right? Laqueen Battle was not really a factor. Elizabeth Bizio did sort of well in some of the nines, but did not get a very big numbers. Dana Bolster, there was no particular pattern that I can see. Tim Flaherty, who's really out, in the western part of the city, you figured he would get most of his votes there, but he also picked up some East Cambridge votes, probably because Tim Toomey was working the area and telling people, hey, he's the guy you got to vote for. And but he's most of his votes were out in Ward 9, which is where he lives. But also 11-3, which is, out where Paul Toner lives, and I think Paul Toner was primarily backing Tim Flaherty. John Hanratty, did very well in 9-1 and in 10-2. I think he may live in 10-2, right? Et cetera. Mark McGovern had some good precincts in around 3, 4, 5, where he kind of lives close to there, but also did pretty well out in the bigger ones with the high voter turnout in Ward 9, et cetera. Patty Nolan, again, was unaffiliated with any particular candidate slates. So she got big numbers in Ward 9 through 10-2, which is out around where she lives. I don't think I need to go through all of these ones here. Probably the single most lopsided total was Sumbul Siddiqui, who got 400 ballots out of 11-2, which is, I think, Ringe Towers, I believe, is part of that. Denise Simmons was sort of citywide, but certainly wards 3 and 4. Sabrina Wheeler was largely a citywide vote, but did have some better precincts elsewhere. And Kathy Zusi, biggest precinct for her was 9-1, but also a few other precincts where she did pretty well, etc. So that was how it shook out for city council. If you do the same thing with school committee, again, I won't go through this in great detail, but you can see how certain candidates distributed pretty well across the city. Other candidates were, largely more neighborhood-based campaigns and sort of did well accordingly. All right. Now, I think the last thing I would say, because I don't want to go on with this forever, right, is something that the city doesn't put out, but you can derive it out of the ballot data. And I know some candidates were asking me, said, well, okay, we're behind my number one votes. Who is getting the number twos? Or how many number two votes did I get? Not that you're going to get elected on number twos, but it is a bit of a measure of it's a measure of something, right? So I'm again, I'm not going to dwell on this too much here, but for example, if you were to look at the city council's numbers for number two vote distribution, so behind a number one vote for Al Zuby, I would guess. My guess is that Sabrina Wheeler would get the bulk of them, and sure enough, yep, 884 of them, like a third of them go to Sabrina Wheeler, and then far less numbers to Azim. Again, Al-Zubi was not part of the ABC group, but she was very hardcore left-wing, kind of the socialist crowd. An Azim number one vote most likely goes to other ABC people like McGovern, Bolster. Sabrina Wheeler was also on ABC, etc. Behind a Tim Flaherty vote, you'll see John Hanratty principally, and Denise Simmons, for example. I can understand that. Behind John Hanratty, you'll see the biggest ones going to some either to Flaherty or to other CCC candidates, etc. So I won't belabor this point too much here. You can also do the same analysis with the number two votes for school committee. And you can see here, with a candidate who were part of that CEA slate, you'll tend to see large numbers going within the slate. So behind DePaula Santos, overwhelmingly the comparable candidates were Lily Havstad and Caitlin Dubey. And behind Dubey, who was behind her, you'll see. You'll see again part of that slate. Richard Harding, a lot of bullets, meaning it was just a Harding number one, and 452 of his 3,000 ballots gave no second choice at all. But Elizabeth Hudson does well on those, as does Carolyn Hunter. I actually want to go double check those numbers just to make sure that that's exactly right, but we'll see. Same thing, Elizabeth Hudson ballots would largely favor Eugenia Shahu at 583, Richard Harding at 611, but also a fair number of bullets, which is actually a little surprising. But then again, she also had a lot of ballots, right? I think I'll sort of leave it at that. Okay. So, anyway, is there anything I forgot here? Probably yes. There were some of the, I guess maybe the last thing, just to sort of wind this down, I'll just say this, is that, all right, so we elect a school committee, we elect a city council. What does this actually mean in terms of what we might expect in the coming year? We are at a curious period right now where the money is not falling from the sky like it has been in some other years. So that even though we have a bit of the Mamdani effect, where we brought in more socialist leaning candidates, if not outright socialist candidates, and put them into elected office, they would be the ones who would want to just, rob the rich, give to the poor, right? Or give to the better, the people who are part of their constituency. But the thing is, if the money's not growing on trees, I can imagine that we're going to have some controversy where some of the more socialist leaning people will say, we have to fund everything. Because don't you know we are, we have an absolute obligation to house everybody, to feed everybody, to have government runs grocery stores, just like Mamdani, right? But then hopefully the manager and some other counselors will see be the ballast that says, well, whoa, wait, you can't really fund all this stuff here. You'll probably see some sort of further prioritization that in those areas, but. We can't just do unlimited funding. And that also applies to the schools. My understanding is that some of these slate candidates for the school committee, if they had their way, would double, dramatically increase the salaries of all the support people and everywhere. I heard they may also want to have a seat on the school committee itself, not a voting seat. But that was actually part of the understanding. If you are supported by this slate, you will support that notion. So anyway, we'll see. Some of us are a little worried where we're heading. A lot of us also feel that maybe now's the time for us to start maybe rethinking how we do civics and political stuff, so that maybe we'd be a little better off if the people who are going to be making decisions about municipal finance and taxation are not based elected based purely on what they said about bike lanes, or on housing development. It's kind of a little bit of a failure of our PR system, quite honestly, that we elect people based on certain criteria, but then their job is actually not just to be that doing that. They actually also have to make sure the city services are taken care of, and everything else works well. So, and if you're elected based purely on whether you like bike lanes or whether you want to upzone the whole city, that doesn't necessarily pay the bills or do anything else. So, anyway, I think I'm going to wind it down with that. So, hopefully, it won't be too long before we do the next program. So anyway, so thank you very much, and I'll see you one of these days again on Cambridge Inside Out.